previous program was Justice Matters, and that is heard Thursdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for a special Democratic governor debate, and that will be hosted by Arthur Schwartz for Advocating for Justice. That's coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
Welcome to Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. We have a very special presentation tonight. The New York Progressive Action Network and Our Revolution, which is a national 501c4 organization started by Bernie Sanders, is having a debate tonight among the three candidates who have declared their candidacy for governor of the state of New York. One is Tom Suozzi, who's presently a congressperson from Nassau County. The second is Jemani Williams, who is the public advocate for the city of New York. And the third is Governor Hochul, who is the acting governor. She took over after after Andrew Cuomo left. She is going to be represented in this debate by Gail Brewer, who is currently a city council member in the city of New York. The show is going to be brought to you from the feed from that broadcast. It's being broadcast. It's being live streamed all over the country. And we will come back at 8:30. Randy Credico and I are going to talk about the debate and the governor election. So we'll see you again at 8:30.
That's part of Queens, I believe, and Nassau County. Tom started his career as the youngest mayor of his hometown of Glen Cove. He then became Nassau County executive at a time when it was in bankruptcy, and he got it out of bankruptcy. He then became a congressman, where he's been fighting for, particularly for restoring the SALT tax deduction, which was eliminated under the Trump tax cuts. So Congressman Suozzi was kind enough to make time to be here in person. He had many commitments tonight, but he really wanted to be here, and we really appreciated it. Congressman, welcome to our forum. As explained before, you have 5 minutes for an opening statement about anything you want to talk about. So you're on.
Well, thanks so much, George, and thanks to everybody on the call. I can't believe there's 195 people on this call. It's awesome. Fantastic. I'm sure many of you don't know me already, so I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my background. My father was born in Italy. My mother was Irish and English. I'm the youngest of five children. I studied accounting. I went to work for Arthur Andersen and Company for a couple of years. Then I went to law school at Fordham Law School in Manhattan. And then I clerked for the chief judge of the Eastern District of New York. I went to work for a big law firm called Sherman and Sterling. I became the mayor of my hometown for 8 years and helped to turn it around, did a lot of great environmental things there. I became the county executive of Nassau County for 8 years. And as George mentioned, I turned the place around, got 13 bond upgrades when I was there, went from junk bond status to A ratings. And I ran for governor against Elliot Spitzer. You didn't mention that, George. I ran for governor against Elliot Spitzer. That didn't turn out very well for me. Didn't turn out very well for Elliot Spitzer either, as we all know. And then I lost my reelection for county executive in 2009 to a guy named Ed Mangano. He's been convicted of bribery and corruption since then. So the rule is you can run against me, but if you beat me, your life is over after that. So don't beat me in a race. Anyway, I went to go work in the private sector again, and then for 7 years, and then the opportunity came to run for Congress. I really missed public service. It was a long shot for me after having lost those races, and I ran for Congress, and now I've been in Congress for 5 years. I'm on Ways and Means. I was appointed by the Speaker to the Congressional Executive Committee on China, looking at Chinese human rights. I'm the chair of the Uyghur Caucus. If you've heard about the Uyghurs being persecuted in China, I'm the leader of that effort in Congress. And I'm giving up Congress to run for governor. It's a great honor to be in Congress, great responsibility, but I feel like our country's in a lot of trouble right now and our state's in a lot of trouble. And my proven executive experience, my common sense approach, and my platform of trying to actually lower taxes in New York State. I know that's not going to be a big popular thing with this group, to fight crime, which is a major problem in our state, preserve the environment, and to help our troubled schools, which I'm most passionate about, is helping our troubled schools. And so this is the Progressive Action Network, and I want you to know that I was the environmentalist of the year by the New York League of Conservation Voters for all of New York State. I was once the person of the year for the New York Immigration Coalition for the work that I did for the undocumented back in 1994. When I was mayor, I set up the first day worker shape-up center anywhere on the East Coast of the United States of America, became a model for others to follow. Other work I did to kick ICE out of Nassau County, not working with our police when I was county executive, and other work that I did related to the undocumented. And third, I will have a F rating from the NRA, and I have a 100% rating from Planned Parenthood. So I'm running for governor of New York because when I was born, there were 45 members of Congress from New York State, and I'm 59 years old. I was born in 1962. Today, there's 27 members of Congress. It's going down to 26, and that's just one statistic that shows that we're really losing influence in our country in New York, and it's because we're losing people. We lost 300,000 people in New York State last year alone, the biggest out-migration of any state in the United States of America. And we love New York, and we love our state, but we have to figure out how to make it attractive for people to live here, to work here, and to do business here. And that's a big challenge for us right now, because we're going to slowly erode our influence. We're very fortunate we have Chuck Schumer as our majority leader looking out for New York, Hakeem Jeffries, who is hopefully going to be the speaker after Nancy Pelosi when she decides to leave. Will be a big help, but New York is losing its influence, and we have to figure out how to make our state more attractive again. I've fought against the corruption in Albany. I did a thing back in the 2005 or so called FixAlbany.com. I battled Shelley Silver and Joe Bruno and other people. When I ran for governor, I fought for a property tax cap because property taxes are so regressive and they're hurting so many people in our state, especially senior citizens on a fixed income and young people trying to buy a house. So I've always considered myself a progressive, but I'm not really progressive in the terms of the modern day progressive as much. So I'm more of a common sense Democrat now. So I want to open it up for any questions that you have for me. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on with you right now. I see there's now 258 people on this call, which is awesome. I grew up in Glen Cove. I represent Queens, Nassau, and Suffolk County. George, also Suffolk. I lived in Manhattan from 84 to 91. I have connections to upstate. My father-in-law was born in Niagara Falls. I've traveled the state on many occasions. I saw somebody before was on Saranac Lake, a very beautiful place. I hiked to the top of Mount Marcy, a big outdoors person. And I'm sure I can give you other connections if somebody asks me. But thanks so much, everybody. Really appreciate the opportunity. Time coming from Nancy. Mulțumesc.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you for that introduction to your background. So my first question, do you support the New York Health Act, which would convert New York's current employer-based health insurance system to a lifetime universal single-payer system?
You know, I support the idea behind the New York Health Act, but I don't support the New York Health Act. I would not support it. I think that New York State right now is got the highest taxes in the United States of America. People are leaving our state in droves, and we can't add this $300 billion expense to the state budget. In the United States of America, there are 330 million people. About 170 million get their insurance from their employer, about 100 million more get it from Medicaid and Medicare. A bunch of other folks get it from the private insurance, not the private insurance, the, oh, I forget what it's called now, the exchanges, about 45 million people. And there's still about 25 million people that are uninsured. But New York State has the lowest rate of uninsured in the country. It's one of the
My second question.
Oh, I had 30 seconds, she said. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
So
it's a two-parter. If you could answer both, it's would you veto the bill if it passed through your legislature?
You know, I'm willing to talk to people. I'm willing to talk with I'll work with anybody. One of the things I campaign on is I'll work with anybody. I'll work with Democrats. I'll work with Republicans. I'll work with progressives. I'll work with moderates. I'll work with anybody to get things done. And if my legislature decided that they thought it was the right thing to do and they could persuade me as to why it would not ruin the state, I'd consider it. So I'm not going to say whether I would or would not at this stage of the game.
Okay, so you wouldn't say whether or not you would veto the bill. Thank you.
But I oppose the bill, so to be clear.
You oppose the bill, yeah. Would you support extending the eviction moratorium that's set to expire on January 15th? Do you support the bill introduced in the good cause only eviction bill pending in the legislature, which would bar evictions unless based on a good cause?
You know, I've supported the extension of the eviction moratorium in the past, but I think we need to start figuring out how to fix this problem in our state and move forward. I think we provided so much money to the state of New York from the federal government, billions and billions of dollars, $28 billion. And I got an opinion the other day that any of that money can be used for rental assistance. And so we need to figure out how to start moving forward from this issue. There are a lot of people. Listen, the idea of the eviction moratorium and the ERAP money was that people who got hurt by the pandemic, they lost their job, they got sick, somebody died, they couldn't go back to work because they had to take care of their kids. All the different reasons that people were hurt by the pandemic. That's really important that we did that. And I've supported that all along. However, there are people that are abusing the system. There are people that are working still, that are financially secure, and are just telling their landlords, you know, forget it, we're not paying it. And I've had small landlords come to me and talk to them about how this is crushing them. So I think there has to be a balance. I mean, we have to protect tenants, but we also have to make sure that we keep the business of the landlords going in the process. It has to be fair. It has to be equitable. But I don't think we should extend it again. And I don't support the good cause eviction process. I think that right now we have some of the most stringent eviction protections anywhere in the country in New York State. And that's good. But we have to make sure that we are maintaining a balance between landlords and tenants. You know, one of the reasons I endorsed Eric Adams for mayor of New York City is because he talked about balance. You know, he talked about, you know, he supports the limo driver, but he also supports the guy in the limousine as well, because 65,000 people out of 8.8 million pay 50% of the income taxes in New York City. You support the people that are being victimized by cops that are breaking the rules, but you also have to support the cops. There's a balance to everything. And we've lost that sense of balance in our country. And that's one of the things I fight for.
Thank you. My next question. Last session, a statewide coalition of over 120 organizations supported a budget that would raise taxes on high-income earners and reinstate the stock transfer tax that would raise billions in new revenue to fund services such as vital state aid owed to our public schools and would help all New Yorkers while reducing our state's large income gap. Do you support this approach to the budget?
So I'm batting zero with your agenda, but the reality is I don't. New York State is really in a lot of trouble. I'm all for increasing taxes at the federal level, and I've supported that. I'm on the Ways and Means Committee, and I advocated for increasing taxes at the federal level. We can't keep on increasing taxes in New York, though, because people are leaving New York. We have the highest taxes in the country. We can't chase Wall Street out by having a stock transfer tax in New York, and it's not elsewhere in the country. Businesses will leave New York in droves, Wall Street businesses. So those businesses are a very important part of our economy. So, you know, Democrats and progressives have really made a point of saying, you know, we're against the rich, we're against the wealthy, we're against Wall Street, we're against these different things. But reality, we need those businesses in order for us to survive. They're paying the taxes for us here in New York State. So there's got to be a balance. I'm all for increasing taxes at the federal level, but I don't think we can continue to increase the tax burden in New York State. That's why we're losing so many high wealth people. And those people are paying the taxes in our state. So there has to be a balance. And we have lost that balance in our state, and we're becoming less and less attractive on a regular basis. So I think we actually have to actually reduce the property taxes and the income taxes in New York State.
Thank you. My next question, New York led the nation in 2019 by passing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, setting the state on a path toward getting off of fossil fuels and prioritizing environmental justice and good green jobs in the process. However, 2 years later, there's very little funding to go along with the promises of the bill. What is your plan to make sure that we reach the promises of that bill and fund climate and environmental justice?
So I'm very, very, I have a good answer for this one for you guys. I totally support that 100%. We need to increase the funding. I've worked so hard in Congress to bring money to New York State for climate action. And it's something that's near and dear to me. I won an award from Al Gore when I was the mayor of Glen Cove for the work that I did on cleaning up polluted sites and closing incinerators, including cleaning up Superfund sites. And I moved to electric vehicles when I was county executive and I'm the chair of the Long Island Sound Caucus, where I've increased the funding by 500%. I'll do everything I can. I held a conference recently on Long Island about wind power, where it can be a win-win-win for everybody. It can be a win for the environment. It can be a win for business, and it can be a win for labor, good union jobs. So I'm 100% supportive of that. Somebody's not muted. Help desk, I think. So I'm 100% supportive of that, and I'll do everything I can to try and bring money for that. Somebody asked a question, did I support something?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions in the chat. I don't think we're going to be able to get through all of those. I have a couple more questions left on here for you. So the next one is, do you support the following? The Fair Pay for Home Care Bill, which aims to address the shortage of home care workers by raising their poverty level wages from an average of $12.50 an hour to $22.50. And secondly, the New Deal for CUNY bill, which would return CUNY to a tuition-free institution that produced so many talented and productive graduates.
I am totally supportive of increasing wages for home health care workers. It's a very big issue for me. It's near and dear to me. I have a piece of legislation in Congress to actually create long-term care insurance for people, because it's a problem in our country. I grew up in a house, all four of my grandparents lived in my house growing up. Three were very sick. I used to take my grandmother to the bathroom when I was a teenager. You can imagine what that was like. My mother was a registered nurse. And my parents didn't want us to have that burden. And they got long-term care insurance. And they died at home. 95, my dad was, 2 weeks before my election in 2016. And my mom was 93. And they had long-term care insurance. But long-term care insurance is not affordable for people anymore. And we have to figure out how we can create a public-private partnership to create affordable long-term care by creating a federal insurance program for catastrophic care. And that includes increasing wages for home health care workers. We can create a whole new generation of mainly women of color who work, are the main ones that work in that industry, a whole new middle class, because it's such an important industry. There are 10,000 new senior citizens every day in the United States of America. Baby boomers are turning 65 every day, 10,000 a day, and it's going to go on for another 8 years. And then it'll in the next 18, 20 years, we're going to see an explosion of baby boomers needing long-term care. Medicaid cannot sustain this. Nursing homes cannot sustain this. It would be an inhumane system. It'll be an unaffordable system. So we have to create a vehicle by which to create affordable long-term care insurance and pay home health care workers. We have so many more seniors than ever before, and we have less people to take care of them because people have smaller families and so many people move away from their hometown, so they're not there to take care of their parents. So this is a very, very big issue to me, and I care about it very much.
Could you also speak on the New Deal for CUNY bill, which would return
and I support that. I support that. Yeah, very important.
Thank you.
I think it's more likely we'll get something done in Washington to try and get free community college for people as a first step, but I support the idea.
Finally, do you accept contributions from real estate developers and large landlords? And if yes, how can voters be assured that these donations wouldn't affect your policy preferences and judgments in office?
Well, I will accept donations from real estate developers, but I'm not getting many. They're all going to the governor, the sitting governor. I've been in public life for since 1994. I was first elected in 1993. I've never let a contribution influence my decision making. And I've got every politician could say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I've got a long record, and I will run on my record for my entire career. I can do it because I've done it. So everybody's going to say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, when I was county executive in Nassau County, I created a thing called No Wrong Door, which was a model for health and human services for the country. I took social services, health, mental health, veterans, seniors, youth, physically challenged, drug and alcohol. I put it in one location. And one of the things I'm most passionate about is that I want to try and help our schools, our troubled schools in New York State. 75% of the people in jail have a drug, alcohol, or mental health problem. 50% of the people at Rikers Island have a learning disability. The problems of life related to crime, poverty, homelessness, everything else, all emerge at a young age. And we need to take our existing social services and not-for-profits and push them into our schools so that when a teacher identifies a child with a problem or an administrator identifies a child with a problem, they have a social worker that will come in and help them navigate the system to try and solve those problems, not only for that child, because they're a captive audience, they have to come to public school, but their family as well standing behind that. We need to look at what Desmond Tutu said that Eric Adams quoted often. We spent a lifetime pulling people out of the river. We need to go upstream and stop people from falling in the river in the first place. And that's the thing I'm most passionate about, is to figure out how can we bring our existing social services into our school districts to help these kids so that they have a better opportunity and a better life. We'll never solve it just by creating equity, even with everybody having one social worker and one school psychologist and one guidance counselor, because the volume of problems in at-risk school districts are so much higher. We need to take all of our social services and move them towards prevention instead of towards just dealing with emergencies when they result later on. And my experience as a proven executive who's got the time and done the work to make government work on a big scale, I can get that done. So I know that wasn't really your question, but I wanted to make sure I got that point in before I finished my questions. And
Okay, that's actually my last question. And I was just going to let you know you could give a closing statement.
Okay, my staff is telling me I have to go. I'm doing a telephone town hall. I apologize. Listen, you're great. You're wonderful people. I can't believe there's 300 people on this call. Thank you so much for being interested in the future of our state, in the future of our country, for being involved in politics. Your passion, your excitement, your ideas are essential to help us move forward as a state and as a country. I'm very grateful to all of you. I really don't expect to get endorsed by you, but I appreciate and value your good work that you do, and the fact that you care as much as you do, that you're sitting on a Zoom call at whatever time it is now, 6:20 at night, listening to a bunch of politicians give their ideas for the future of our state. You're essential to the future of our democracy. I'm grateful to all of you. And I wish I could give you better answers that went along with your agenda the way it is. But I really do not question your motives or your desire to try and help people make the world a better place to live in. I'm going to copy a statement of Eric Adams. He said, you know, some of us don't need to be woke because we never went to sleep in the first place. I've been working on this stuff all my life, trying to make people's lives better. And that's all I want to do, is try and help people and make their lives better. And I'm going to continue to try and do that. And hopefully I'll get a chance to be the governor of New York State to try and implement some of my ideas that I'm so passionate about. Thanks very much, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for being here. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
So while we're waiting for our next candidate, let me just say that this event is being sponsored by a partnership between NYPAN and Our Revolution. We're two organizations that arose out of Bernie's 2016 race, and we share the goal of continuing the struggle for class, racial, and climate justice. OR on the national level, NYPAN in New York State as the New York affiliate of OR. What we've done in the last few years has been breathtaking. We played a huge role in getting rid of the IDC, which got the progressive Democrats in charge of the Senate and now passed an incredible packet of legislation in the last few years that the Republicans were refusing to even debate. We also won voting rights. New York now has early voting, mail-in voting, liberal absentee voting, shortened time periods for registration, all of which did not exist before. Primarily, one of the things we did was when Cuomo and the chair of the, I'm blanking on his last name, Jay, tell me, Jay, the other Jay.
Jacobs.
Jay Jacobs, I always forget his name. When they conspired to bar people from voting in the presidential primary and canceled that, we sued them. And we went to federal court and we got that election restored and gave the voters an opportunity to express their choice in that election. So what's our goals in the next year? A few very short but important goals. One is to elect a progressive governor. It's time we had one. The second thing is to pass important legislation like the New York Health Act. And finally, we want to have people in office in the state Democratic Party and the state committee to run for office and to have progressives determining policy for the Democratic Party. And in order to do that, we need your help. So in the chat, you'll see a link where you can join and become a sustainer of OR and NYPAN. For just $5 or $10 a month, you can be a member and a sustainer and help us continue with our work. Now I see that we have the representative or surrogate for our candidate, Kathy Hochul, the sitting governor of New York, and that's Gail Brewer. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you very much. I hope I can do her justice. I will try. But I really appreciate NYPAN's participation, and I thank you. I knew Kathy Hochul when she was the lieutenant governor, and I think she contributed to her current position by really going and meeting with people in all the counties. That makes a difference.
So let me just give you, Gail, before you start, can I just give you the rules of the road here? Yep. Thank you. Let me just say, if people don't know, Gail served in the New York City Council for several terms and was a champion of progressive causes, just pure and simple. And she then became the New York Manhattan borough president for two terms and was very distinguished in that role. And now she is back in the council in her old district, doing the people's work. And we really welcome you, Gail, here to represent the governor. Let me just say that the governor was born and raised in Buffalo. She went to Syracuse University and became a young attorney who worked as a legislative assistant to Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. She then ran for Congress in an election in a district, and I remember this race well, in a very conservative area outside of Buffalo, and won in an incredible race. And she then became the lieutenant governor with Andrew Cuomo as governor. She is now the 57th governor of New York and the first woman. Is really significant. So Gail, we're giving all the candidates and you as a surrogate 5 minutes to make an opening statement about the governor, and you can say whatever you want, and then we'll ask a series of questions. Is that okay?
That sounds great, and thank you very much. I'm sorry I started so quickly.
No, that's fine.
Thank you. So I think you gave the fact that she's from Buffalo. She's ran in a different difficult district and won, and then became lieutenant governor. And now, because of all the reasons that we know, she's now governor. So, and she comes from a working class family, She was part of an immigrant, grandparents, and worked in a flower shop when she was small. So I think, and also she was part of the town clerk and local government. So it's been a long haul to be governor. I think, you know, if I may speak for myself, knowing local politics and local issues makes a big difference, even as governor. And that's what she has shown, distinguished fashion. So I think she has really, to be specific as to what she's done, she's looking at $1.2 billion in middle-class tax cuts for 6 million New Yorkers. I think we know that small business is at a very challenging time. 200,000 small businesses are going to get $100 million in support in terms of dollars, $1 billion in property tax rebates for 2 million New York families. And perhaps most important, she talks about being a mother over and over again. Her kids are grown, but she talks about it all the time. Childcare accessible to 100,000 more families, and investing $75 million to raise childcare worker wages. Incredibly important. We know that we hear all the time how so many of the childcare workers are going to work for other agencies, particularly the Department of Education, because their wages are so much lower. And I assume across the state, it's even worse. And Congress, she fought to save Medicare funding and the Affordable Care Act, which at the time, people forget, was incredibly controversial. And I think she knows right now the prescription drug problems and the coverage and all of the inequities that exist. I'm sure you'll ask about the Affordable Care Act. I don't know if I can answer it, but I will try. I know I want it to pass because I want personally, because I want our wonderful Godfrey to get it. That's just personal. She has taken, she's been hit like our mayor, previous and current, with the issues of COVID. Nothing could be more important to people. I know people every single day who are getting sick, hopefully not dying. And she has pushed vaccination efforts, often in a controversial fashion. As you know, some of the other counties, not New York County, are not willing to abide by what she is stating. It's hard to do that, I will tell you. And she has mandated healthcare workers and others, including the school community, to get vaccinated. And it is very, very challenging. She's committed to $10 billion investment to grow the healthcare workforce by 20% over the next 5 years. That's the largest investment in healthcare in state history. It's $4 billion for wages and bonuses for healthcare workers. And as we know, not only do they need it, but we need more healthcare workers. So this is incredibly important. And the other issue that she's very focused on, and I know you are and I am, is climate change. And I think they at the state level are talking about the most aggressive plan to combat climate change and to make sure that we have good paying, clean energy jobs. I know we've been talking about this for a long time, but now I believe she's very focused on actually doing it. In my situation around the borough, I've met with, some of the groups like Peggy Shepherds and others that work on environmental issues. There's such a small number of people actually in the green environmental world actually getting jobs. They need funding. She has, when she's taking office as governor, she's led efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, expand solar energy, all with funding, and breaking ground on the largest green hydrogen plant in North America. And she's talking about offshore wind farms, which if you know folks along the Eastern Shore always complain about. Every one of these things is not easy. And she opposed the gas frack power plant in Queens. People in Queens were very, very pleased by that. And of course, she's talked about fellowships for communities that traditionally have not had the opportunity to work in these jobs. And I think she's going to continue on this issue of climate crisis. I want to say that as somebody who knows her pretty well, I would say that the reason I'm so supportive of her, and I'm one of these people who doesn't endorse often, I'll be honest with you, is that even though you may not agree with her on every issue, you know that she has thought about it. She doesn't make a decision based on politics. She makes a decision based on the reasons that she thinks something should or should not exist. And she also has hired phenomenal people. The general counsel, Elizabeth Fine, she worked in the city council. So she was general counsel there when I was there. And she's brilliant and fabulous. And certainly hiring Catherine Garcia, who ran for mayor, as you know, and I thought was a great candidate as her head of operations for the state of New York. I don't know. I can't think of a better manager. She took the disaster of food accessibility.
Time.
Okay, and made it great. So I would say just generally the people she's hired have been excellent. And that's the reason why she's doing so well. And thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. I'm Jay Belank. I'm the co-chair of NYPAN.
Yes.
I know we've submitted some questions, and I hope you've had some time to review them. And our first question is, do you support the New York, I'm pretending you're the governor, so, do you support the New York Health Act? Which
well,
would convert
I mean, I
New
cannot,
York,
convert yeah, I call New York. The Dick Gottfried Act, is that what you're talking about, Jay?
Yes.
That's yes. what I think. That's what I call it because he's put so many hours into it. I mean, I think the answer, as I understand it, and what she has told me, is that at this point she has put $2 billion to support healthcare wages, $2 billion for mental health hygiene worker retention bonuses, and then COLAs for the wages for the workers, and $2 billion for capital infrastructure. I don't know that she is specifically supporting his health insurance system, which is basically what it is, universal single payer system is what I would call it, in addition to your name. So I would say that at this point, there's a lot of funding going into the healthcare system, but I don't know if the insurance, which is really the issue that I'm associate with the act, is something that she is specifically for. I just don't know.
Well, as a follow-up to that, if the act is passed in the assembly and Senate, yep, would the governor sign it?
All right, that would be the same issue, Jay, which I don't know the answer to that question, so I cannot answer, but I can say that she's doing, according to the material that I have, everything in terms of funding for the industry and for the workers and for people who are accessing the hospitals, but I don't know about the insurance aspect, which is really what it's all about. That would be the bill.
Okay. There's also, would you support extending the eviction moratorium that's set to expire on January 15th? Right. And is there support to the bill for the good cause only eviction bill pending in the legislature, which bars evictions unless based on a good cause?
I know them both. My understanding about January 15th, obviously as a council member, I am very focused on that. I don't believe she's going to support the extension. I can tell you that in our office, and I assume offices across the city and the state, we are gearing up for making sure that people get every kind of legal aid attorney. To the credit of Mayor Adams today, he sent out a very extensive listing of all of his staff ready and willing to make sure that people don't get evicted. So I don't believe she supports the extension of the moratorium on evictions. That's my understanding. That's why we're all hoping also, Mayor Adams pointed out, and we all want more federal money, because we know that thanks to legal aid, there is a court decision that states if you apply for the aid and you deserve the aid, then you will not be evicted. So the problem is there's no money in the account. So Mayor Adams, in his press release, also indicated that he's pushing, and we all are pushing, for federal money to be in the account. But I think the answer to your question is she's not supporting January 15th moratorium to be extended. So that's my
good cause for
it. And good cause. I'm personally supportive, and we're actually got two cases today personally that would be impacted by this law. So I am working on a letter to that effect. People who would not be evicted, I think, if this law was a law. But I think in her particular case, what she has done is, and I don't know as much about her position on this as I do about January 15th, but I know that she is working hard to end homelessness, which is part of the focus. If this law existed, maybe fewer people would be homeless. She has worked hard recently to figure out how to deal with the homeless with some extra teams, because many of these individuals, and I even know some of them on the street, are not going to go to a shelter. They need different kinds of houses. So she's talking about that and funding it. She's talking about getting rid of 421A and getting a new, more effective program. I never understood why that program supports high-income buildings. She's talking about figuring out how when you get out of any kind of incarceration, you end up with real homes, which I think places like Fortune Society have been talking about. She is funding an eviction prevention legal assistance program, and she is creating a disaster recovery and resiliency union for home rebuilding. That's something that doesn't exist in Manhattan so much, so I'm not so familiar with it. And she's talking about finding ways to prevent homelessness statewide. But I don't know that she's supportive of the a good cause eviction, which is what I call the bill.
Okay. Climate addressing wealth inequality. Last session, a coalition of 120 organizations supported a budget that would raise taxes on high income earners and reinstate, not impose, reinstate the existing stock transfer tax that would raise billions in new revenue to fund services such as vital state aid owed to our public schools and would help all New Yorkers while reducing our state's large income gap. Do you, is there support of this approach to the budget?
Okay, I can tell you what I know is that, as I indicated earlier, she's providing $100 million for the small business community, almost 200,000 small businesses. She's going to accelerate the, as I talked about earlier, the tax cuts for 6 million New Yorkers. That's $1.2 billion. She is delivering a property tax rebate for another 2 million New Yorkers. And she talks about increasing tax credits for food production, which is, I know from personal experience, a huge issue in New York. The way in which we get food is scary, that we might not have it either locally or even how it comes trucked across the United States. So that's what I know, but I have not heard that she's going to support the stock transfer tax, which I know quite a bit about, or the budget high income earners, which I know came up in the state Senate and the assembly last year.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Climate justice. New York led the nation in 2019 by passing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, setting the state on a path towards getting off the fossil fuel and prioritizing environmental justice and good green jobs in the process. 2 years later, there's very little funding to go along with this. What is your plan to make sure we reach the promises of the CLCPA and fund climate and environmental justice?
So my understanding is that I think this is something that is moving in the right direction with the millions of dollars, 500 for the offshore wind infrastructure, which I know is always challenging from some of those seaside communities, but incredibly important. And then in terms of that would fuel, for lack of a better word, 1.5 million homes and 2,000 new jobs. That's what some of this money would go toward. Initiate planning for wind transmission network for another 4 million homes, and then an offshore plan that would talk about putting even more such infrastructure in deep water. So it sounds like to me that this major climate justice is something that she's very focused on. I will say locally, although this is not a state issue, we have to make sure that local law 97, that would help us more than anything, gets implemented. That's the city council law that says buildings have to be energy efficient, and there's dates 24, 25, and so on. And I have to say that locally, that would be helpful more than anything else in our city, just in terms of local support for climate change. And there are other things, but that would be the biggest here locally.
Okay. Well, thank you. Do you support the following, the fair pay for the home care bill and a new deal for a CUNY bill? Basically, we return CUNY to a tuition-free institution, and the fair pay for home care bill would basically take a sub-minimum wage out and increase the wage to above poverty level for home care care workers.
And I think domestic workers, too. That's a group that I worked with for a long time. I think that my understanding is that there is a home care workforce initiative, which would enable the agencies that work with home care, and I have to say sometimes they're very challenging, to implement evidence-based programs to help them to recruit, retain, and train. The issue with that is always some of those agencies, in my experience, are very challenging. But that is an initiative that needs to be initiated, but also a lot of oversight. There's a workforce transportation incentive, so that sometimes there are a lot of barriers, I think, particularly in upstate communities, to get to work. And you can imagine in upstate community what the issues are, not here in New York so much. Then there's the issue of the amazing workers. I have great respect for them who work for developmental disabilities communities where there's a nonprofit or maybe a for-profit. And they need a lot of retention initiative to make sure that they can stay in those professions because they're hard work and they're underpaid. Then there's also grants for just generally for the folks who are working in this field. Obviously, we talked about the ones that are working specifically with the developmental disabilities, but generally the nonprofit world working in this field is very underpaid. And then there's a talk about some data-driven strategies and figuring out how to increase funding for rising direct care staff costs. One of the issues, as you know, is the indirect costs in contracts. It's always a city and state issue. I believe that the American Rescue Plan has funding for lots of this. And I don't know, maybe you know better than I, if what I call the second infrastructure bill, the Build Back Bill, Build Better Back Bill would also have funding for these jobs, because I can't tell you how important it is. These are jobs that have way too little benefits, and they need skill development and so on. So I believe this is something that Kathy Hochul is very, very focused on. I also want to say, and I believe too, that the state has applied for $2 billion and 14 different initiatives from the federal government to get money for the things that I just suggested. And I don't know if the BBB bill even has more funding. In terms of CUNY, I don't know the governor's perspective on that, about being a tuition-free institution. But I went to a rally recently, personally in Queens, where we were talking not only about that, but also just funding, whether it's, I have to, you know, say whether it's tuition-free or not. CUNY and SUNY, I know you just mentioned CUNY, but SUNY too need tons of money. And there are state legislative, I think a better question, in my opinion, might be, do you support the funding bill in Albany, which would give a lot more money to CUNY and SUNY? I personally feel very strongly about that. And that might be something that the governor would be more specific. And then CUNY and SUNY would figure out how to pay. But one of the things
that we're running a little
full-time over faculty. All right, go ahead.
We have one more last quick question.
Okay.
Will the governor be taking money from real estate?
Oh boy. I know
contributions.
Yeah, I don't.
A yes or no would be really.
I don't know the answer. I can say that when she came out for the two-term only, it was quite created quite a stir from those who would like to stay longer. So I thought that was really impressive in terms of governance. But okay. I don't know.
So with that said, you don't know.
Yeah, don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking your time to do this.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. And if there's any statement you would like to make, you have a couple of minutes.
Sure. I mean, I think that if there's certainly going to be questions at whomever is the governor, the mayor, the president. I am always somebody who looks to see somebody's how they approach governance and government. And I think Kathy Hochul does it in a way that is thoughtful, personal, and really does try to do the best for the families of New York. This is not, being the first woman, she's a good example, I think, of how leadership should exist. So that's why I'm so supportive of her. And it's an unusual person, somebody who is as forthright about how she governs. It's not normal, no toxic, none of that atmosphere that has existed in so many other leadership positions, and that's why I'm so supportive of her.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate you showing up, and thank you very much. And I'm going to turn it back over to George.
Yes.
Thank you, Gail.
Thank you. Okay.
So while we wait for our final candidate, Jermani Williams, we have some requests. One of the requests is just to tell you that this is the first Governor's Candidates Forum that you'll see from any statewide progressive organization. And we feel it's important to bring to you the voters and activists, the opinions and the priorities of all the candidates, so you can make an informed judgment of who to support. And in order for us to continue this work, we need your support. And the best way you could support us, come and join us. Be part of NYPAN, join a chapter, and specifically become a sustainer. I can't say that enough, how much that helps us and do our work. And the in the chat, Anna Marta, is the link in the chat to become a sustainer? So it is.
Yes, it is. Yep. And thank you so much for signing up. Your contribution, your monthly $5, $10, whatever you can give us, it helps us a great deal in moving the progressive agenda forward. We are holding politicians accountable to a people-centered platform. So that's what we do. And thanks again. I'm so excited to see hundreds of people joining. And I think we are going to hear from two local organizers who are doing amazing work in the community on two issues. So I'll hand it over to Thing.
Okay. Hi there. Can everybody hear me? Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah,
yes, you're good. Yep.
Sorry, okay. Hi, all. Many thanks for attending this forum. I'm only slightly technically challenged. Green Barrel here from NYPAN to give you some very brief news about our new All-Manhattan chapter, MPAN, the Manhattan Progressive Action Network, the latest chapter in the NYPAN family. Some of you may have been at our big launch party back in December, which was fun. And fun is good, but things have been moving forward with some actual work since then, and we have a lot more to do. Thanks to OR, as well as contributions from the four original chapters, GANI, POM, UES, and UPA, MPAN starts life with a list of over 2,000 people. So we're going to have some clout, and we're looking for you to tell us how to use that. We're holding our first organizing meeting next week on Thursday, the 20th, at 7:30 p.m. by Zoom. And I'm going to put a sign-up link in the chat for you, so you can sign up and come to that. Everyone's welcome to come, so just grab the link, sign up. It's going to be an action-oriented meeting. Starting off with State Senator Julio Salazar speaking about good cause eviction, so we all know what to do about that. We're also going to discuss having a candidate forum for open seats downtown. That's Eileen's current seat, Gottfried's seat, and the Eileen versus Kavanaugh race. And you can get involved with that, too. And we'll hear from three of our working committees, housing, single payer, and a new one, defense of democracy, which sounds unfortunately necessary at the current time. So sign up, come on out, pitch in. On a final note, I also want to remind NYPAN members to attend our big annual meeting on Saturday, the day after tomorrow, from 1 to 5. And we'll be discussing whether to endorse in the governor's race. So be there. Not a NYPAN member? We can fix that. I'm putting another link in the chat so you can sign up as an associate member. So thanks a lot, and I'll turn it back to Naomi.
Okay, great. Just to let everybody know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the New York Help Act. We've been talking about it and asking the candidates today, and you know, they were kind of going back and forth. Actually, it was a little bit disappointing. We were not getting like strong supports for it, but just to let you know what it is, this bill would provide universal single-payer healthcare coverage for every single person who lives in New York State and who works in New York State. So it would not be employment-based insurance. It's everybody in, nobody out. That's the tagline. But basically, just for the simple fact that you're a human being who lives in the state of New York, you would get all of your healthcare covered with no deductibles, no copays, no networks. all care would be completely free at the point of service for all people, period. So that's what the New York Health Act is. The first time it was introduced into the state legislature was 1992. And in the time since then, it's been studied, you know, by a bunch of different organizations. It's like the RAND Corporation is probably the most, you know, well-known group. But basically, the same way that every other country in the world does it, it costs less than our current system because we are eliminating the middleman. So, you know, there's this thing like, oh, how are we going to pay for it? How are we paying for the healthcare system that we have today? We're paying a lot, but we're getting a lot less care than we need. So, you know, when you compare, you know, the kind of healthcare that we get in the United States, it's, you know, we pay 1.5x on the number two highest spending country in the world. And yet we have fewer physicians per capita than the OECD median. We have fewer physician visits, shorter average length of stay in the hospital, fewer hospitals available to us per capita. So we consume less care, but we pay a lot more for it. So it's just because we're extremely inefficient at producing healthcare. So the New York Health Act would eliminate the middleman, move that other money around, and make it to where we could actually access the healthcare that we are paying for. So that's the New York Health Act. It's super exciting because we have, let me just say, majorities co-sponsoring in both houses of the state legislature. We just need to bring it to a vote. So it's really important to have that leadership and that vision around, you know, a bill like that. So I think that we have our last candidate for tonight's forum here. So George, why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
Okay, thank you. Public advocate Jumaane Williams is our third and last candidate running for governor. Jumaane is a first-generation Brooklynite of Grenadian heritage. He served on the New York City Council representing the 45th district in Brooklyn. He earned his master's degree from Brooklyn College. He actually began his career as a community organizer and then worked for the New York State Tenants and Neighbors Group. There, he fought for affordable housing and across the state and city. Welcome, Public Advocate Williams.
Oh, peace and blessings, love and light to everybody. How's everybody doing?
So I'm gonna just tell you what the rules are of engagement here. First, I forgot to mention one thing. Jumaane ran a statewide race for lieutenant governor in 2018 against Kathy Hochul and got 47% of the vote. That to us was a significant fact, and I left that out. So, Jumaane, we're going to give you 5 minutes for an opening statement to talk about whatever you want, why you're running, your background, your issues. And then we have a series of six questions that Naomi will ask you, and you'll have 2 minutes each to answer each question. And then finally, you'll have 3 minutes for a closing statement. Okay?
Thank you so much, George. Thank you, Naomi. Thank you, everyone. Peace and blessings again. As mentioned, my name is Jumaane Williams, public advocate of the city of New York, currently a candidate for governor of the state of New York. Also mentioned, I'm a first-generation American. I'm a public school baby from preschool to master's. I navigated that with Tourette syndrome and ADHD. Also mentioned, I was a community organizer. I am a community organizer by training. And it was long before Barack Obama, so no one had any idea what it was. My mother asked me to please get a real job. I had to explain to her that it actually was a real job. And then I ran for a city council against six people, one of them an incumbent. Not the first time, not the last time I'd be called crazy for trying to do something. But because of people like the people who are on this call supported me, I got elected. And I've been trying to cause as much trouble as possible since that time. And as mentioned again, on 2018, I ran for lieutenant governor, a seat that most folks thought I was crazy for even trying to do. But at that time, I said, what if we have a lieutenant governor that is not afraid and has the courage to stand up when something is wrong, even if it's against a powerful governor like Governor Cuomo? We came really close to winning. But I think New York State suffered because we didn't. And we didn't have that lieutenant governor to speak up the way it would have benefited us. And I think we're in a much worse shape because of that. And so I decided to run because we have to have a governor that understands the moment that we're in. Unfortunately, most of us may know someone who was lost during COVID. We've lost tens of thousands of New Yorkers. And the one thing that we can do in their memory is not return to normal. I keep hearing leaders say they want to return to normal. And I keep saying, I do not. That's how we got here. It didn't work for most of us. And so we can't return to normal. We have to understand that we have to deal with the infrastructure that wasn't there. We have to deal with how Albany has played politics for so long that even after a pandemic, we have a governor saying that we only need 100,000 units when it comes to affordable housing. And that's not even enough for New York City, much less the entire state. We have a governor who's saying that we're going to do all these great things, but we're not going to raise any revenue. And that doesn't make any sense. And so I am proud to put forth a vision that is bold for the time that we're in. We need New Deal type of bold vision. And in order to do that, to deal with the housing, to deal with climate change, to deal with health issues, to deal with public safety in a real way, we have to have not only that bold vision, but people who have courage to put forward and have shown that they can get it done. You know, I was told that I had to choose between being an elected official and being an activist. And I always said I don't. The best elected officials are activists. So I'm not going to choose. I'm going to be in the streets. I'm going to make sure people's voices who haven't been heard are heard. And so we did that. And I always was told that, you know, you can't do certain things if you want to get stuff done. And I said, no, I'm going to show you that we can get it done and be true to who we are. And I'm proud to have passed 70 pieces of legislation. I'm proud that when I left the council, I was listed as the most productive council member. In the past 2 years alone, as public advocate, I've passed more bills with the help of the council than any other public advocate before me, and almost all of them combined. I did that thanks to many people who supported those causes on the call. But we showed that we can get it done. The issues that we raised, the funding that we got to programs that were never funded before, we showed that you don't have to be beholden to the game of politics to get things done. So the question is, do we need incremental change right now? No, we need bold transformational change. The question is bare basic competence, is being nicer than the person who came before you, is that the floor of what we need in a governor, or is that the ceiling? I think that's the floor. I think that's how we come in. You know, I didn't get elected to get reelected or go to higher office. I would love to do both of those things, by the way, but I got elected to do a job. And so when we get in there, I got 4 years to do as much damage as possible to get things steered in the right shape. And so what I'm asking a Nyperian who I have had the pleasure of working with for so long, doing things that people said that we couldn't do, I would just love one more time if we can partner and help New Yorkers believe in what is possible. That's the type of leadership we need right now to get where we have to go. Thank you so much, everyone. I'm looking forward to the questions. Peace and blessings to you all.
WBAI New York.
Thank you so much for being here, Jumaane. It's really nice to have you. So I'll just get started. My first question, do you support the New York Health Act, which would convert New York's current employer-based health insurance system to a lifetime universal single-payer system?
Yes, I do. Health is very important to me. If we don't understand how important it is now with this pandemic, I don't know when we get it. But my father, may he rest in peace, was a physician. My sister is a nurse practitioner currently. My mother is a retired nurse. So the medical care and the medical field has always been important to me. We got to make sure folks have the health care they need. And again, the way we can do these things is actually by entertaining revenue raising options, because we're not going to get this federal money forever. And the way that I see people counting on this money gets me very nervous. And so we have to, as a state, make sure that we're putting in place what we can to get these things done.
And, okay, so would you make enactment of the New York Health Act an issue in your campaign?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been supporting it for some time, so I'll just be continuing to support it on my run for governor.
That's great. Okay, my next question. Would you support extending the eviction moratorium that's set to expire on January 15th? And do you support the bill introduced as the good cause only eviction bill pending in the legislature, which bars evictions unless based on a good cause?
No, the short answer is yes, but I do want to, you know, speak about it a little while. Housing, something I've been working on for a very long time. We do know that the eviction moratorium can't last forever. But what I also know is this. You can't have an eviction moratorium end in the middle of a pandemic in the winter and not have good cause only eviction. The combination of those things is wildly, wildly dangerous from a public health standpoint, from what it's going to do to homelessness and housing. To have a governor that has to be prodded to understand you can't do all those things together is just a benchmark of, you know, the problems that we have at this moment in time. So I'm very, very concerned of where we are in housing, coupled with sound like we want to tinker with 421A instead of throw it away and throw it in the garbage. Sound like we don't have the type of unit that we actually need to change and affect truly income targeted affordable housing. All those things together are quite concerning to me. That was a long answer to basic yes, but yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Okay, my next question. In the last session, a statewide coalition of over 120 organizations supported a budget that would raise taxes on high-income earners and reinstate the stock transfer tax, which would raise billions in new revenue to fund services such as vital state aid owed to our public schools and would help all New Yorkers while reducing the state's large income gap. Do you support this approach to the budget?
I would call probably most of those organizations my friends, and those pillars of a transformational economy were actually some of the pillars of my lieutenant governor race. And it is important, and it's troublesome that, again, the governor won't even entertain revenue raising options. There's some additional revenue raising options that we have to entertain. We can't create the transformational new New York that we need if we're not going to do this. And we have to be able to do it in a way that allows the conversation to take place. And so I want to come from a place of, let's try this time, not necessarily attacking all the folks that have benefited and are doing better after the pandemic than before, but let's try to talk about civic responsibility. It is your civic responsibility to do what you can on behalf of New York. This is all of our civic responsibilities to do what we can. We can't do what we need unless we have the revenue that we need. And I believe, I'm hoping that changing the tenor of that conversation will bring some more people to the table to do what it is that we need to do to move New York forward.
Thank you. My next question. New York led the nation in 2019 by passing the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, CLCPA, setting the state on a path towards getting off of fossil fuels and prioritizing environmental justice and good green jobs in the process. However, 2 years later, there's very little funding to go along with the promises of the CLCPA. What is your plan to make sure that we reach the promises of the CLCPA and fund climate and environmental justice?
Yeah, I don't want to sound broken record-ish, but again, without entertaining revenue-raising options, it's very hard to do these things. And so when I listen to the State of the State address, which, by the way, I think could have been anything said before the pandemic. And so it's remarkable to me that there's an address that you can just plug in a date before the pandemic and it'll be the same. But even the things that were the right tone, there weren't any discussions of how we're going to fund it. And so we've heard this before from prior governors, we're going to do this, this, and this, and there's nowhere to fund it. You can't say we're going to do these things and have no funds and not entertain revenue raising options. It's just not a realistic approach to getting these things done. And so the way we do this is prioritizing the things that we're talking about it and really pushing for these revenue raising options, especially because we know the federal money is going to run out and we may not get build it back. And part of that is, I mean, that's another conversation, but I'll leave it here.
Thanks. Okay, do you support the following? The Fair Pay for Home Care Bill, which aims to address the shortage of home care workers by raising the poverty level wages from an average of $12.50 an hour to $22.50, And secondly, the New Deal for CUNY bill, which would return CUNY to a tuition-free institution, which produced so many talented and productive graduates.
I mean, the first one is yes. It's remarkable to me that it seems we're trying to force workers to go to work without addressing so many of the issues that they talked about before the pandemic, whether it's wages so they can feed their family, even as they're taking care of ours, even as they're taking care of people when other people didn't want to come out of their homes during the pandemic, even if we're putting them in dangerous situations like we are with our nurses. We don't want to change those things, but we want to force people to go back to those jobs. I think that's very unfair. Secondly, as a CUNY twice graduate of City University of New York, I know how important it is. As public advocate, one of our first reports was showing how much of an economic engine CUNY is to get people to the middle class, especially communities that have been have struggled before. And I just always remind folks that CUNY was free till about the 1970s. The only thing that changed was the complexion of people who started going to CUNY. The largest expansion of CUNY happened during the Great Depression. That was because people believed to help get us out of that, you had to educate a population. So there's no reason why we can't go back to a free CUNY tuition today.
Thank you. And the last question, do you accept contributions from real estate developers and large landlords? And if your answer is yes, how can voters be assured that such donations won't affect your policy preferences and judgments in office?
In 2018, we took the real estate pledge from NYCC. We have been honoring that pledge as spelled out in New York Communities for Change. We can continue to honor that pledge. We were the first people to win a citywide office with that pledge. I would also say, though, I think if you look at my history, there's been no kind of money or funding that's changed what I believe, how I voted, and who I was going to advocate for, which is probably why most of them don't want to give me money to begin with.
Thank you very much, Jumani. Those are all of our questions, but if you could share a closing statement.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate NYPEN. I really appreciate OR. I really appreciate those of us who are fighting for equity at this moment of time. We're at a crossroads. New York State can do a lot to show the direction this country can be in, but we have to have people that have the courage of our convictions because we're right on these issues. And we don't need Democrats who are going to run away from them and try to be Republican-like, but and now going to give people, boogie people who they shouldn't vote for. We need to give people a vision that they want to vote for. And that's where we've gone wrong. The Republican Party, they're putting all kind of crazy folks out there, but it's working because they're saying that we don't want politics as usual. We don't want the status quo. And people are responding. On our side, we keep giving the same old, and it's not working. So we and I want to give a vision of what people can believe in New York State. I know that NYPEN and OR want to do the same thing. Some folks jumping in earlier, we might have got off the finish line. I know that we can do it again. I know that we can do it together. I don't think I can do it without your support. And so I'm really hoping that I can get the endorsement and the support of NYPEN and of OR again to allow folks to really believe in what's possible in New York State and don't get in the way of that with just the politics as usual.
Well, thank you so much. I think you have a lot of support in that chat, and they weren't as nice earlier to all of the candidates. So it's, I think people are liking your vision. Thanks That's for awesome. Joining us.
Thank you so much, everyone. Peace, blessings, love and light to you all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. First of all, thank you to the candidates who have come to tonight's forum, and thank you to all the local volunteers and organizers who have helped put this Our Revolution NYPEN candidate forum together. Traditional media doesn't do a good job covering working class issues, right? Or they cover it in a framing that's corporatist and elitist. That's why our Revolution in NYPEN is putting these forums together and broadcasting it on our national platforms, getting the progressive message out to thousands and tens of thousands of people out there. So thank you again to everyone who has been a part of this forum. I'm so excited to see that hundreds of people tuned in on Zoom. We had a great turnout, so look out for our endorsement announcements in the upcoming weeks. Thank you to all of you who have signed up to become a member of our groups. Your $5, $10 goes a long way, so thank you again. This was a high energy forum. I'm pumped up for what's to come in 2022. So thank you and good night.
And you're listening to WBAI New York. We will be connecting momentarily to Arthur Schwartz. But first, we're going to hear this announcement.
Host of Backstage Stories on WBAI New York. On Thursday, January 13th at 9 p.m., we'll celebrate the life and times of actor, director, producer, author, and activist Sidney Poitier. Join me for an hour of conversation and music dedicated to Sidney with love on the next Backstage Stories.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York City, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. We are awaiting Arthur Schwartz to join us and Randy Credico to summarize and wrap up the political debate that you heard from candidates for the governor of New York State. It was on from 7 o'clock until it ended 5 or 6 minutes ago. Perhaps if we listen to Arthur's opening theme song, it will conjure him up.
We live in a political world. Love don't have any place. We live in times when men commit crimes and crime don't have a face. We live in a political world. Icicles hanging down. Wedding bells ringing, angels singing, clouds cover up the ground. We live in a political world. Wisdom is thrown into jail. It rots in a cell in the sky that is hell. Leaving no one to pick up the trail. Mercy walks the plank. Life is in the air. Death disappears from the steps of you that live in vain. We live in a political world. Courage is a thing of the past. Houses are haunted. Children are unwanted. The next day could be your last. We live in a political world. The one we can see and feel, but there's no one to check. It's all a stack deck. We all know for sure that it's real. We live in a political world. The cities are a lonesome fear. Little by little, you turn to the middle, but you're never sure why you're here. Political world under the microscope. You can travel anywhere and hang yourself there. You always got more than enough room. We live in a political world, turning and thrashing about. As soon as you awake, you're trained to take what looks like the easy way out.
Excitement about? Well, DJ Black Icon One, The Law, and myself, Mama Soul, are super excited to share with you the Harlem connection to women who rock. And we will be joined by a special guest as well, the one and only Miss Liv Warfield, because she is indeed a woman who rocks. So join us this Friday, 10 p.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM,
New York,
and worldwide on WBAI.org. And Don't forget to catch the replay on Sundays at 3 a.m. And also, we invite you to take a deeper dive into the Harlem Connection radio show by listening to the program archives.
I'm Marcia Pendleton, producer and host of Backstage Stories on WBAI New York. On Thursday, January 13th at 9 p.m., we'll celebrate the life and times of actor, director, producer, author, and activist Sidney Poitier. Join me for an hour of conversation and music dedicated to Sidney with love on the next Backstage Stories.
Titled, produced and hosted by Malika Lee Whitney, will be heard on Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Untitled presents features on the arts, culture, education, and social issues. You will also enjoy music from a variety of genres. Special guests complement the program with insightful and engaging conversation. That's Untitled, Fridays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. over listener-sponsored, non-commercial, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a celebration. The award-winning Midnight Ravers can now be heard every Friday from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. So wake the town and tell the people. We'll continue to present the best in music, history, and social commentary, along with expert discussion of the important issues and events of today and yesteryear. So keep it locked into WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
Hey, this is Michael, a BAI buddy from Brooklyn. WBAI, oh, WBAI, you're listening to WBAI. 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Listen and learn. And become a BAI buddy today.
And yes, you are still tuned to WBAI in New York. And we await Arthur Schwartz, who is, I believe we have made the connection. Let's take it away, Arthur.
I am awaiting Randy Credico, who I'm connected. He's here. So we've just had an hour and a half, almost, a few minutes short, of debate between Jumaane Williams, Tom Suozzi, and Gail Brewer, who was speaking for Governor Kathy Hochul. This is Arthur Schwartz, a special edition of Advocating for Justice, and I invited my good buddy Randy Credico, who is a regular on WBAI, somebody everybody should know. And I thought of Randy as somebody I wanted to talk to about the governor's election, because Randy ran for governor once upon a time, maybe more than once. Did you run more than once?
No, I ran for governor once, mayor once, and Senate once. I did the hat.
So Randy's somebody that cares, even about the electoral process, even though he's probably very cynical about it. This is an interesting election. because here is, this is our first election post the Cuomo era. We had 12 and whatever, 14 years of Andrew Cuomo running this state. 14 years. 11 years. Okay. Only 11 years. It seemed like forever. And I considered, when people asked me, I think I'm allowed to say this on a 501c3 radio station because he's not running. People ask me, you know, when people would ask me about Andrew Cuomo, I would say, as far as I'm concerned, he's a liberal version of Donald Trump. He was and is, and historically always was a tremendously self-aggrandizing person, who thought the world revolved around him. And in Albany, the world did revolve around him, except for the last year and a half of his, year of his, even less than a year, 6 months of his governorship. He was nasty. He was mean. He fired people at will. He got back at people that didn't, he felt, you know, were his enemies. And here it is. We in New York, both on the Democratic and the Republican side, because we'll have to get whoever the Republicans are. If they have a debate, maybe we'll cover it on WBAI. I know that, I think Randy might have had Curtis Sliwa on his show. No. Somebody had him on his show. Tom Robbins had him on. And when he ran against Eric Adams. It's going to be our first opportunity to air out the room, or Kathy Hochul says she's already airing out the room. What do you think?
What do I think? She sat there in flack for Cuomo for the last 8 years or whatever, since 2017. And she knew what he was all about, but we know what she's all about. She's part of the system. Her husband's a federal judge up there in Buffalo. And, you know, this is what she does, is embody why the Democratic Party is done. Okay. Because there's no new ideas there. They're all controlled by special interests. Giamatti excluded from that to a degree. He is a career politician. I do like him. I think he's the best of the three by far. And I'm very unhappy with Gail Brewer for supporting Kathy Hochul just because she's a woman. I guess she would support Maggie Thatcher if she was in Britain in the 20 years ago. So just because, or Marie Antoinette in France. I mean, just because she's a woman. And then Tom Suozzi, the only guy in the country that still wears Brill Cream and is as hip as Brill Cream. He's controlled by the same interests. These are those two represent why the Democratic Party is finished. There's no new ideas. They're trying to walk a line with the corporate sponsors and try to appeal to the general public, the average working people. There was, by the way, there was nothing in that so-called debate there that affected people of color, or affected the homeless problem in the state. I was in the subway today. There's homeless people everywhere. That the white liberals that conducted that debate or forum are totally not attuned to what's going on in this city and state. There are still 50,000 people in prison in this state. The criminal justice system is the most rigged in the country. It's racist from the top to the bottom, and that didn't come up today in that debate. Now, Giamatti's probably the best on it, but none of them are that attuned to what goes on inside the courtrooms. I go to the courtrooms. Those people who follow it, they know how difficult it is to go in and watch people being slammed into the criminal justice system and into prison, but it just, they're totally oblivious to it. And so that didn't come up. And so that was disappointing, but it was not unexpected, because I know this Nightpen is not some kind of radical group.
You want to pick a fight, huh?
It may be to you, but not to me. It's a bunch of white liberals. Let's be honest. So I must say that Giamatti is the best one. Kathy Hochul she is Cuomo's border guard for so many years, never spoke out. She made that choice. She still hasn't spoken out. She didn't give any clemencies on December 25th. So, you know, what's the big, she doesn't care. She just doesn't care. Now, that's a long answer to your question, but she certainly is a danger if she is elected to fulfill a full term.
Now, people who are listening, I've never done a tick in almost 4 years of being on the air. If people want to call in and voice their opinion or ask a question, you can call us at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. See, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm not going to espouse any particular candidate because I'm a host. I'm not allowed to do that. But
I'm a guest.
You're a guest. You get to do it. You're a former candidate on this show. I happen to think that somebody like Bernie Sanders is, yes, he's a white person. But I do think that if Bernie Sanders was president of the United States, I mean, it would depend on what was going on with the Senate and guys like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. But if Bernie Sanders was president of the United States, the country, there'd be a lot different message emanating from him. It wouldn't have taken him a year to all of a sudden discover that we needed voting rights as a major priority. Like it took Biden a year to decide, oh, maybe I should do away with the filibuster if it's going to stand in the way of voting rights. And I think that in New York, one of the astounding things that I have learned, so I for those of you who don't know, I'm a Democratic district leader, which I ran for. It was an interesting part of my life. So I'm a former Maoist, former lawyer for all kinds of crazy people, pacifists, draft resistors, people who did sit-ins, et cetera. I ran for Democratic district leader in Greenwich Village when my kids were little as a playground dad. And I won as a playground dad because I had organized people to try to fix up the playgrounds when David Dinkins and Rudy Giuliani were mayor. And but I've been part of the Democratic Party machinery since then, so 26 years. And I can see how the Democratic Party works. So one of the amazing things is that, I think I got a notice that we have a call. You want to put it through?
WBAI, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. This is Ben from Brooklyn. Listen, I had a question, and I know you're a lawyer, Arthur, so you probably know the answer to this. But Jumaane Williams, his whole career, has called himself an activist. And I think Randy was suggesting that he's a career politician, really, in every sense of the word. And my question is, because I hear him in most debates say that he has passed more legislation than anyone else. I know Hochul just passed a bill for term limits on governor. So that's a game changer. That's a big deal.
She proposed it. She proposed it. She didn't pass it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, that's okay. She proposed it. But I want to know one thing. I'm talking about a bill that has real effects on public lives or people in the city. I just want to hear one example of something as significant as that Jumaane Williams has passed.
Well, I'm going to say, one of the before he was public advocate, Jumaane was a city council member. And there was the foremost opponent of stop and frisk in New York City was Jumaane Williams. The foremost. The city council passed legislation that he proposed and led the charge against what was going on under Mayor Bloomberg. Where like one out of every five black men in the city would get arrested every year or stopped and frisked And Giamatti was probably the most vocal opponent of that. Eventually, it was stopped by a lawsuit, but he was a major proponent of stopping it. So I'll just throw that out as one thing. I have to think about his record.
He's been public advocate for a couple of years too, and he's saying he just said on the air that he's passed more bills. He said he's passed more bills than all the other public advocates cumulatively. That's Mark Green. That's whoever his predecessor was. So I'm trying to get one thing. I'm trying to get a little like an actual example of a bill that he's passed.
Well, you have to take a look at bills that he submitted. He can't pass them himself. And by the way, and then at city council, he was definitely the strongest advocate against stop and frisk. And let's not forget that in 2011, I know I was there. I got arrested 8 times. He got arrested 3 or 4 times during Occupy Wall Street. So he was out there all the time. And yes, he was an activist for many years before he got in city council. I'm not saying that he's a career politician. He's been there for 10 years. It's not as long as Gail Brewer or as Christine Quinn or Bill de Blasio. Those are classic career politicians. So by far, Giamatti has done more than anyone else. And there are lots of bills are passed every year in the city council. So I guess you have to go in and see what was passed and what he proposed.
I did a quick look at his website. So and he wasn't talking about that. He only did it as since he's public advocate, but also including as a city council member. So he was the sponsor and leader of the Community Safety Act, which helped stop and frisk. He was the sponsor of something called the Fair Chance Act, also known as Ban the Box, which doesn't let employers to ask anymore in New York City if you have a criminal conviction or arrest record. He passed legislation to require the NYPD Inspector General to review police misconduct cases. He passed legislation that prohibited city agencies from considering marijuana related convictions when evaluating candidate jobs. He was the chief sponsor of a bill that gave New Yorkers the right to record police activity in public places. You know, there used to be times and there are other places in the country, you pull out your cell phone to record a cop and they like arrest you for doing that. I have a good friend who that happened to. So, you know, if you go to his website, there's a lot of, the man's been active, but he was a community activist. He actually was originally an actor, and a man who has overcome a lot of disabilities in running for office. He has Tourette's syndrome, and he's identifies very closely with people with disabilities and their struggles. And why don't we go to the next caller? This is fun.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yes.
This is Arthur Schwartz and Randy Credico. What's your thought?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Greetings to the beloved community. I have a couple comments. And Jessica Christ, everyone speak up about fixing the phones. Besides getting the dead air, you're now getting a fast busy. It has to be fixed. They're paid each month, or we try to pay them each month. The phones must be fixed. But my comment is, I'm reminded of Dante's Inferno, in that the hottest part of hell is reserved for the lukewarm. I mean, I was shocked by Gail because I've dealt with her personally, and she goes way out, but there's no understanding why she's standing with Hochul, okay? So maybe Arthur, you're now, somebody was saying about her being a woman, but, and Giamatti Williams, I know somebody who was in his district when he was a councilman, and he initially did some really go out of his way and visit, and, you know, a particular building or complex, or, you know, But then he put someone in as his chief of staff who was overly, she was impressed too much by her whiteness, okay? So she just ignored people across the board. She was a disaster. So maybe we need to look further. And tomorrow I'm expecting the Iceman Inheritance, which deals with the racism and sexism and all the other isms that we're really not dealing with. I think as I think it was Leonard that had on a guest, the next Civil War, Stephen Marsh, he's done studies that this country is set up 67% for a civil war. We're certainly seeing we're moving toward collapse in all kind of ways. So I think we need to deal with this whole concept of whiteness. It doesn't exist because we all come from the so-called African. That's all of our heritage.
Okay.
And that's
all right.
My comment, but I appreciate
thank
you guys.
Thank you. By the way, the next candidate we may hear from is Bill de Blasio. What about Randy?
I have no idea. I didn't know what the question was.
There was no question. All right, do we have another caller?
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm thoroughly enjoying the program. I was just so pleasantly surprised to see that WBI is doing something to really cover who's running, because you can't find anything else, and I'm a BAI buddy. But as for Jamani Williams, when I first heard that he wanted to run for governor, I got really pissed off because I had voted for him as an advocate, you know. But when I listened to what he had to say, I was very impressed. Yes, we want different services and additional monies and to make sure that we can keep people in their housing. But we have to figure out how we're going to raise that revenue. That's something that has to happen, you know. And I don't hear that from other people. It's a responsibility that has to be thought about. I also like when he spoke about civic responsibility, particularly when it has to do with the wealthy and paying their taxes, you know. And these are issues that are going to address everyone. This is what I'm really about. I don't want to focus on anything except the human condition in New York State, and then it will address everyone. So, brother that spoke just before, very quickly, I was going to say one more thing. He was really focusing in a kind of, he seemed like a little disgruntled about Jamani Williams. But I want, you know, him to look at who is addressing the issues that we have to look at. We have our children. We have to keep them healthy. We have to have single payer. We have to have people who will do that. And we don't have to worry about what color they are or anything like that. We just have to make sure that we get our needs satisfied. You know, I would like us to talk about in that way.
You know, I want to say, I'm not sure if this was spoken to in a debate, but one of the things that Cuomo blocked as governor was to increase the tax burden on people with wealth. Totally blocked it. So the amount of revenue, we have some of the richest people in the world in New York, like Randy, and the amount of revenue that could be raised by a very small tax increase, which Cuomo always opposed, should be an issue in this campaign.
Well, MSG doesn't pay any taxes. The Mets don't pay any taxes. The Yankees don't pay any taxes.
How about Steve Cohn?
Nobody pays any taxes, and that's who he caters to. I mean, he wanted Amazon to come in and use slave labor, as if we don't have enough in the 49 prisons that are still around. But that's why Kathy Hochul, she went in there, and she represents the vision and the mindset of Andrew Cuomo. Otherwise, he wouldn't have selected her. So remember, you're getting more of Andrew Cuomo, who's a reactionary and neoliberal, who did not tax the rich, did nothing for the MTA, did nothing for the homeless crisis, did nothing, didn't give any furloughs out during the COVID crisis for people in prison, gave three clemencies in 11 years. This is a bad guy, and she represents the vision that in the mindset that Andrew Cuomo embodies, and that's who Kathy Hochul is. And I hope Jumaane really tackles it. This is the issue. We're at a tipping point, as Jeffrey Robinson said, right now. And race is the key issue in this state. And they must focus on that. You know, black unemployment, the redlining that still goes on, the abuse by the police, the abuse by prosecutors, the abuse by judges, how rigged the judicial system is from top to bottom, the appeals court, the state's court of appeals, all of it is rigged, and it needs a complete house cleaning, or we cannot go forward. And if they're not going to address it, I'm not interested in it.
Okay, I think we have one more call. Do we have another caller holding on?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Hi, is this me?
We only have 3 minutes, so let's get to it quick.
Okay, I can't hear, so I don't know. So I wanted to say that if Jumaane gets in, and since he was such a proponent of stopping stop and frisk, it'll be interesting to see if he gets in, how he's going to sit at the table with the so-called mayor, because he's for bringing it back. But I turned it on, and I heard Gail Brewer speaking, and I remembered that Linda was going to, broadcast the mayor, the governor debate. So Randy, are you on for political analysis? Because I was confused.
Yes, he's on for political analysis.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Arthur?
He's on for political analysis, not comedy.
Right.
I just wanted to get that straight. Okay.
We got two minutes, and then I was just wondering
why he was on the radio. Thank you. Bye.
All right.
All of my shows and see how much humor I've done in the last year.
I have to do a comedy show with you one day, Randy. So this is Advocating for Justice on WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And the only reason we are on the air, the only thing that keeps us on the air, is listener donations. Somehow this entity, the Pacifica Foundation, which I've actually gotten to be, I'm counsel to the entire foundation, 5 radio stations, is listener donations. We raise $12 million a year through people like you who are listening, who donate, who become WBAI buddies, or who just call in and make a donation. Go to WBAI.org, make a donation, keep Randy on the air, keep me on the air, keep all the wonderful shows that we have all week with people expressing points of view that you do not hear anywhere else on the radio. And Randy, you want to say one word of sign off?
Yeah, I agree. You have to keep the station going. Call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org. Give2wbai.org to support the antenna. We need your support. Otherwise, you're not going to get this kind of programming covering local issues of importance statewide, nationally, and internationally. You can't get it anywhere else. This is it. This is the firewall right now. And if it burns down, we're all in a lot of trouble. So please, throw some money in, folks, and keep this thing going. And let's keep it here for the next generation. That's all I have to say. My closing words. And then Friday, I just want to say that I have a tremendous show with Emily Serra, Kunstler, and Jeffrey Robinson on their new movie that opens up Friday, tomorrow, at AMC Lincoln Square. It's called Who We Are, A Chronicle of Racism in America. And my co-host will be Roger Waters. So you want to listen to this show tomorrow. It's all about racism in America and this brilliant new cinematic masterpiece by Serra and Emily Kunstler.
Tomorrow at what time, Randy?
3 p.m. on WBAI, 99.3 at 3 p.m. tomorrow. Here on Live on the Fly Friday. It's going to be really good. Trust me.
All right. So thank you, everyone. We will see you next week. And I usually sign off with some rendition of Change is Going to Come. And hopefully we are about to hear it. See everyone next Thursday on Advocating for Justice or tomorrow on Randy's show.
Thank you.
And WBAI is the radio station speaking truth to power, presenting a range of alternative views so you can keep your sanity, like Elvis Costello says as he walks through troubled times. And for WBAI to continue, we must pay rent at 4 Times Square, which houses WBAI's transmitter.
We're 2 months behind on that rent, so it's $34,000. So that's a lot we have to catch up on. So a really good reason to support WBAI right now. So help the one truly listener-sponsored radio station pay for the rent to house our transmitter. Say, yes. This is a donation.
2 months behind, folks.
Yes.
What are you going to do when it's gone? Then right. You're going to have to listen to pancake recipes
Paulette.
By Brian Lehrer.
Yeah.
$17,000 a month is what it costs, and we are trying to raise enough funds to pay back rent from 2021 and the rent for 2022. Please go to towerfund.wbai.org, towerfund.wbai.org, and donate to keep listener-sponsored WBAI broadcasting into the future, or call 212-209-2950. And say you want to donate to WBAI's Tower Fund. Thank you.
And we have been listening to a special with Arthur Schwartz advocating for justice following the debate amongst the governor,